With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Michael Parker and D Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Greetings, truth seekers. How's it going? It's Michael Parker coming to you, as always, from Los Angeles, California. And it has been an extraordinary 24 hours. We've got a lot to talk about today. I have said on the show many times, I'm a big football fan. Weirdly enough, I was not watching the game last night, but I'm sure you guys have all heard by now about the injury that was sustained by Damar Hamlin. He is a player that is with the Buffalo Bills, and he collapsed during the first quarter of a game with the Cincinnati Bengals. Both teams, very, very good teams in American National Football League. And I wasn't watching the game. I kind of forgot about it. The wife and I were doing things, and we were sitting there having a little drink and talking, and then all of a sudden it popped up on my wife's phone. So yes, I saw the replay many times over. But the reason I bring this up is that this is a watershed moment, and our hearts and prayers are with Damar and with his family and with the Buffalo Bills that he makes a recovery. But it looks very challenging. And the reason I'm bringing this up today is because there was an immediate rush on social media to, try to figure out what happened to him. And I saw physicians speaking to the fact that it looked like a particular type of cardiac arrest, an issue called commotio cordis. And in all my years of being a football fan, I had not heard of this. I don't want to say that I was skeptical. I was simply just trying to gather information. But many people on the internet and on Twitter and continuing today are trying to link this to the vaccine. I cannot say that it's not linked to it. I think that the commotio cordis or cardiac arrest situation is very believable, but I wouldn't be surprised either if there was another issue in relation to this. The reason that I think this is important is because for the establishment, the government, the scientific, academic, pharmaceutical establishment, this is probably the biggest sign to date that there is a portion of the population who is very aware of the potential danger of the vax. And when something like this happens, that is where immediate attention goes by a portion of the population. I'm not saying that's what happened to Damar because I don't know yet. But what I am saying is this is a moment. We have crossed the Rubicon, and the establishment must be absolutely aware, if they were not already, that there is a major, major portion of the population that suspects these when these types of things happen. Now, athletes have been collapsing on the field of play across the globe for the past 2 years, but this is the first time that I know of that it's happened on a NFL or college level playing field. And so it is a saddening, scary moment for all of those who watch, and just this sudden acceptance of the possibility that something may not be all that we hear it is. Now, to be fair, immediately doctors came forth and said, this isn't related to the vax. It is cardiac arrest. But here's what Peter McCullough had to say. And Dr. Peter McCullough is someone who's been on the show a couple of times. We have great respect for Dr. McCullough. I'm just going to read a paragraph that he put out. It says, from Peter McCullough, I watched the play live both as a fan and a cardiologist, and I saw blunt neck and chest trauma, a brief recovery after the tackle, and then a classic cardiac arrest. I have communicated to one of the most experienced trainers in the world, and we agree that it was a cardiac arrest in the setting of a big surge of adrenaline. If Damar Hamlin indeed took one of the COVID-19 vaccines, then subclinical vaccine-induced myocarditis must be considered in the differential diagnosis. We have been told he was successfully defibrillated on the field and has been intubated and is not spontaneously breathing, which is consistent with anoxic encephalopathy. The nation prays for his complete recovery. John Leak, who co-wrote the book with Dr. McCullough, went on to say, because he's trying to weigh all the options, he says a Google search of the words football player commotio cordis between the years 1970 and 2022 yielded only one report from 2011 of a junior varsity football player in Massachusetts who suffered from commotio cordis. Typically, when commotio cordis happens in athletes, it's as a result of baseball when the ball hits the player in the chest. So we don't know what happened here, and our hearts and prayers are with Damar Hamlin and his family and the team. But this is a moment, I think we've crossed the threshold here. This is now out there in the mainstream of the possibilities that something else is happening. And I'll bet that the government and the academics and the pharmaceutical industry is shaking in their boots, whether they say so or not. If you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We are also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. There is no reason for you to miss out on anything we have here on TNT Radio.
Headlines as they come in.
They have the breaking news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We discussed this yesterday and said we'd know more when we were on today, and, well, now we know more. Kevin McCarthy did not get the votes needed to become a Speaker of the House, and now they will need another vote. Here to discuss this is TNT News producer and host, John Madlin.
All right. Well, it happened, Michael. Kevin McCarthy failed to get the needed amount of votes to become Speaker of the House. To become Speaker, you need at least 218 votes. The Democrats were unified in their push to nominate Hakeem Jeffries of New York. Easy to unify when it is not going to happen, and it is easy to unify when you can use it as a talking point to shame the Republicans and call them a steaming dumpster fire. So, however, this is exactly what must be done to change politics as usual. The establishment yes men henchmen would do as the party says, but where do we the people come in when you put that into the equation? Many are not happy with Kevin McCarthy. As I said in my run, constituents of the 11th District of New York had voiced opposition to him becoming the next speaker. Establishment politics are doing what your party says to do without competition, debate, and driving the change that is needed. The charade coming forward right now is the Democrats are organized, unified, and that's what their party represents. I'd say go check out the Democrat-run states and cities, and, well, you'll see what their party truly represents. It's a brand. Just ask Mayor Eric Adams of New York. McCarthy received 203 votes. Jeffries, the Democrat, got 212. But unless Republicans vote for him, that will never get him a win. So now on to a second vote, and that's occurring right now as we speak. So right now the numbers are McCarthy at 190, Jeffries at 203, and now Jim Jordan has 19, which means this vote will not get a speaker either. So this is going to be drawn out. So the hostile takeover has occurred. The system is shattered from the establishment. So what you're seeing in real time now is, like I said, the chance for bargaining and new leadership to flourish. And who will step up? But this round, all of a sudden, Jordan's got 19. Don't believe he had that last time. So we'll see how this goes. And the exact definition of establishment, party politicians putting people over the people, that rhetoric can only be defined perfectly by Dan Crenshaw of Texas. So he was voting McCarthy and said anyone who didn't and voted against him are narcissistic enemies for having basically their own thoughts and perhaps listening to their constituents. McCarthy bragged about having the record for the longest speech given on the floor of the House of Representatives and states he will have the longest vote if that's what it takes. So I don't know what to tell you, Michael. This drama might be going on until tomorrow while they're still voting. I told you drama was coming, didn't I? There's an epic debut of our winter season of our favorite political series. Are you ready for more?
I guess. I don't know if we have any choice. So let me ask you this. If they don't get enough votes in the second round, and they push it till tomorrow, what do you think ultimately happens here? I mean, what if they go to a third vote and don't get enough votes? What is there a timeout or a threshold that we pass where they're like, okay, this doesn't work this way. We have to pick someone.
I'm unaware as to how many times this goes. Usually, because the way establishment politics has been, you don't actually run into this. You just do what you're told. So the fact that right now we're seeing 19 people going with Jim Jordan, and they're going to have to go to a third. It's done. And there's nothing left. They can't move forward. And they say that this would basically force the hand of Kevin McCarthy to withdraw his bid. And now we're seeing Jim Jordan start to emerge as the possible next speaker candidate, because if Kevin McCarthy says, okay, you guys win, we can't just keep doing this forever, then the Republicans will have to get behind Jim Jordan if that's the consensus. But this is that behind the doors debate. People are calling each other. If the amount of people that are not going to vote for Kevin McCarthy stay that way, this just keeps going on. I mean, at this point, there's nothing that can be done.
And I admit, I'm a little bit surprised, as much as I'm not a fan of Kevin McCarthy, and I knew that it was not a done deal, I still thought that he would be seated. Now, that being said, I could roll with Jim Jordan.
I would thoroughly enjoy Jim mm-hmm. Jordan. So that pick is excellent. You know, people are out there running polls on Twitter. You see the name Donald Trump floating around. You see Lee Zeldin, who ran for governor here in New York, who was a congressman, didn't run again, obviously, because he was running for governor. And there is apparently the ability to take somebody from the outside to be the speaker. How that goes, I mean, I don't think that's ever been done. So we're going to, if I'm a betting man, Michael, it's going to come from within the House. And it seems that either Kevin McCarthy, there's going to be a big battle to get this done, maybe much more concessions, going back to only one person basically being able to recall the speaker. We'll see how it goes.
It's been a long time since civics class for me. And I like yourself, I don't know how it works as far, because they've been talking about, you know, the Trump as Speaker of the House for a while. And I always thought, well, I think that's extremely unlikely, but I didn't think this was likely. So all bets are off at this point.
Yeah, the all bets are off. This is 2023, yep. And we are going to have to, in some way, some form, set a new standard for insanity. So this might be the perfect start for the year in the world of politics. You know, it's something that, again, it's not something that we get to see every day. We mm-hmm. we only watch the people fall in line, and this is what the people really want. They want to stop. I mean, people that are really paying attention to politics, they want to stop seeing you go, my party said this, so I say this. And then they want to, that's the main level. And then when you go to the voting booth, it's always my party is the Republicans and I do this. But the people voting for Republicans that identify as Republicans, that are Republicans like myself, want to see Republicans actually act like Republicans, yes. As crazy as that sounds. But what we're getting is this diluted version of Democrats and people that are making decisions that are driving our nation further and further into debt. And they, as Matt Gaetz put in that quote, that op-ed he wrote, that McCarthy will vote for anything, promise anyone anything, and is basically mm-hmm. soulless. That is what we call an establishment career politician. It has to stop. And what we're seeing is people breaking away on the main stage. That's never really been done. They're saying, no, we're not letting you take it. And no one knows what the hell to do.
Well, we're going to talk more about this in the second hour, because I know that you have a second story regarding Carrie Lake. And then I have Jeff Zink, who ran for office in Arizona, and he's going to kind of also give us the temperature on the ground there. So, John, thank you for this report. I will see you in the second hour. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Carol Lieberman. She's been on the show before, once or twice. This week, she's featured in Newsweek talking about this terrible situation with the Idaho murders. So that is what we're going to be talking about on the other side. Stick around. You do not want to miss this.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
You know, noise proves nothing, but facts and truths do. There is a war on for our children in the United States and around the globe. I'm focusing right now, right in our own backyards in the United States. And when I'm telling you noise proves nothing, facts and truths do, it is because I have been just inundated in the last couple of weeks. What do you think about Twitter? What do you think is going on? You know what? I don't. When I receive and find out concrete facts, solutions about what's really happening at Twitter, and that I can see and we know that CSAM, child sexual abuse material, has been thwarted, taken down, or in a better position, then I'll kind of weigh in more on Twitter. But for now, I just see a lot of distraction, misinformation, disinformation, and a lot of people looking for web traffic, clicks, and likes, and the such. And so our goal at the Warriors is always protecting children, educating you about children, giving you resources that you can easily adapt at home to keep your kids safe online, and for you to learn what's really happening with online safety, because you don't hear about it in the media too much.
Lynn's Warriors with Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
From smartphones and TVs to desktops, laptops, and tablets.
Every audio device in this hemisphere.
All you have to do is tell your smart device to play
TNT Radio.
All right, truth seekers, in this hour, for the remainder of this hour, up until 12:50, I will be joined by Dr. Carol Lieberman. She is known worldwide as America's psychiatrist. She's the host of Dr. Carol's Couch on VoiceAmerica.com and also the Terrorist Therapist podcast. That's a great name. She is a forensic psychiatrist, expert witness, best-selling author, award-winning author of four books, two on terrorism, two on relationships. And this week, she is featured in an article in Newsweek magazine on this terrible, horrible crime that was committed in Idaho. And we're going to be discussing that. Dr. Lieberman, welcome back to Deprogram.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
And I appreciate you making time because I know that you have your own show shortly after this. So yes. I appreciate that. And so I didn't realize until today that you were in this Newsweek article. Let me just say one thing before we get into this deeply. I was surprised when they announced that, you know, they had apprehended a suspect. And then when I started reading about it, that he was a PhD student and a teaching assistant in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology, I was like, oh, my God, this probably is the guy. Your thoughts.
Yes. He is a forensic psychiatrist's dream. You know, this is the work that I do as an expert witness and so on. He is so complicated and so interesting. I mean, of course, the crime itself was horrendous. One of the most horrendous crimes. For a lot of different reasons. But yes, you know, I've been talking a lot about this, and you mentioned Newsweek. Actually, I've been in a couple of their articles about this case. And the first one was towards the beginning of before they had arrested him. And I talked about how, and everything that I've learned since then supports what I said back then, you know, sticking my neck out back then, that he is an incel. Which stands for involuntary celibate. You probably know about these guys. Yes. These are people, you know, not to be confused with just sort of your ordinary nerd who gets rejected and feels bad and depressed and all of that. Incels are a different breed in that they develop a tremendous hatred towards women, partly because it's a subgroup on the internet. and they fuel each other's fire. You know, they get each other even more enraged, like, oh, how that was terrible that woman did that. You should rape her or kill her, or, you know. And in fact, incels have started a campaign, I guess you'd call it, free Brian Koberger. They want this already. Yes, free Brian Koberger. So, incels, let me just kind of explain. Incels are men, as I said, who have a lot of rage towards women, because starting out when they wanted to date women and have sex with women and all of that, they got rejected time after time after time. And yes, that does sort of eat on them, eat on anybody to be rejected time after time. But incels, incels, the hatred accumulates and builds up into a rage. And they have this idea that they are entitled to having a woman or women have sex with them and go out with them and all of that. And women who don't do that, who don't want to give them the time of day, women who are particularly beautiful and particularly accomplished and, you know, cool women, the beautiful people, the women they call Stacy's and the men they call Chad's. And so these four students at Idaho University were sort of the embodiment of Stacy's and Chad's. They were beautiful. They were smart. They were in sororities. They were popular. They, you know, had their life plans. They planned. They were very on top of things, you know, really. And so whether it's going to turn out that Brian actually did speak with them and have they, you know, get rejected, you know, particularly by Kaylee. I mean, this is the interesting part. There's so much that's interesting. I know I'm going all over the place, but
that's okay.
Do you remember, you know, Kaylee's father has been the most outspoken parent. And, you know, he was very angry about the police not finding the person sooner. And he had all the right to be that way, actually. Of course, now he's stepped back from that a little bit because they caught somebody. But that doesn't mean, you know, it still took 7 weeks. But anyway, he had said earlier on that Kaylee had told him that she had a stalker. And the police were ignoring that. You know, they talk to there's a guy in a store who owns a store or works in a store who said that when the four of them came in, they told him that Kaylee has a stalker, and that's why they walk behind her to make sure that the stalker can't get too close. And so it seems to me, and now they've traced the cell phones, and they saw that Brian, in fact, has been in many of the places that these four, and especially Kaylee, have been. And so, you know, if it turns out, if that gets proven and so on, which it probably will, Kaylee's father has a definite lawsuit against the university, the police, whoever it was who were told about this and who did nothing to protect her.
So I've got to be honest, in the beginning, I didn't follow this because we don't do a lot of crime on the show. It's mostly politics. I was aware of it, of course, but it was only recently that I started digging into this. And there were several things about Brian that I find really odd. And right off the bat, I was like, oh my God, this very well could be the guy. Apparently, when they apprehended him, he said something to the effect of, "Did you arrest anyone else?" Something like that, which to me, that is a very odd thing to say. If you were innocent, you would probably say, "Well, why are you here? Why me?" or something. But to have this kind of blank look on your face and then say, "Did you arrest anyone else?" I thought that was quite telling.
Yes. There's a number of ways to interpret that. One is, you know, hoping that they are looking at other people. You know, I hope you're not just looking at me for this. I hope you're, you know, mm-hmm. looking at other people. Another way of looking at it is that he did have a partner, which I don't think is really likely, unless there was someone who maybe inadvertently helped him in some sort of minor way, not certainly not killing, not at the crime scene. And then another possibility is that he's trying to build a psychiatric defense of dissociative personality disorder. So, you know, but now his lawyer, he has a lawyer, a public defender.
A public defender, yes.
Yes, his parents said they don't have the money to have a private attorney, which is always the kiss of death. Because if you're going in for even one first degree murder trial, and you don't have a private attorney, that is, you know, you don't have good chances, because they have so many cases, they can't spend the time that you would need to prove somebody like this didn't do it. But anyway, but his attorney, his current attorney, who's just working on the on getting him extradited from Pennsylvania, has said that Brian has said that he expects to be exonerated, that he's innocent. He's so shocked that they, you know, found him, and he expects to be exonerated. But the lawyer at the same time said that he wants him to have psychological testing when he gets to Idaho. Because, you know, hoping at the beginning when you do that, it's to hope that the person will be found incompetent to stand trial. So those two things sort of contradict each other.
I tell you what, let's take a break right there. I've got a bottom of the news hour news break. I'm speaking with Dr. Carol Lieberman. We're going to continue this in about 2 minutes, and I've got a lot of questions, so stick around.
News doesn't stop breaking, and we don't take a break from covering it. TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Thousands of people in the Philippines remained in emergency shelters in the wake of devastating Christmas flooding as the death toll climbed to 51 with 19 missing Monday. The European Union nations will try again to mold a coordinated approach on if and how authorities should check incoming airline passengers from China for any new COVID-19 variants. The number of clandestine boat migrants crossing the English Channel is up more than 60% in a year, with levels having reached yet another new record high.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah, 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, also known as America's Psychiatrist, is my guest for this hour. We're talking about the Idaho murder case, and Brian Koberger, who has been apprehended, is about to be extradited. As Dr. Lieberman said, he's not fighting extradition, but his public defender wants him to have psychological evaluations. But let's get back to the incel thing for a second. It does appear that when he was in high school, he was overweight. He was very awkward. Friends and girls said that, you know, he was teased quite a bit, which sounds in some cases like some of the school shooters, where these are people who are socially shunned. Then at some point during high school, he lost a lot of weight. And upon losing all that weight, he also became very combative. Someone around him, I don't remember if it was an aunt or grandmother, said that, you know, he had kind of a ultra vegan diet and became almost OCD about what he would eat, including asking his family to change out the cooking utensils. If they'd ever had meat cooked in them, he would not eat out of them. So to me, this feels like the potential buildup of somebody who had some serious mental issues.
Well, yes. Yes, I think we could say he has some serious mental issues. But, you know, the story that you just told, yes, about the aunt and the meat, you know, I think that that is a reflection of his, first of all, I think he's been struggling with himself in terms of his killing impulses. On the one hand, he wants to commit the perfect crime. And on the other hand, he's trying to fight these urges to kill. And I think along with this struggling with his urges to kill, he's also struggling with cannibalistic urges. And he doesn't want to eat meat because he doesn't want to taste it. Just like, you know, he became a heroin addict in high school and he tasted heroin and he became addicted to that. And I think he's afraid that that same thing would happen with meat. And, wow. You know, even further, I don't know if this is going to turn out to be true, but it occurred to me, you know, taking this cannibal trail a little further. I'm sure you probably heard that first they said everybody was stabbed brutally, blah, blah, blah. And then they said that Kaylee was stabbed even more brutally, that she had flesh or her body was gouged. Actually, her father said that. That she was injured the most, stabbed the most. And, you know, thinking about, he used the word gouged. And this is horrible to think about, but thinking about it in terms of cannibals, you know, you can go down that path if you want.
Well, I was not aware of the heroin aspect until earlier today. So I don't know if that's been out in the media about him prior to this. And certainly this is the first time I hear about hearing the cannibal possible tangent, but I mean, this guy has a psychopathy, the denial and the desire to create this perfect crime, and the fact that he continued to go to work and go to school and was supposedly wearing the gloves in grocery stores. This does point to a person who was fully aware and fully, his faculties were fully intact.
Yes. He does not deserve the defense of not guilty by reason of insanity. And I've been involved as an expert, you know, as a defense expert for people claiming that. But, you know, he was definitely aware. And I mean, even though these things are rather crazy, you know, and yes, he has mental problems, the planning and everything else for that night, I don't see, I mean, his attorney's probably going to try an insanity defense, but I don't see how he could win on that. You know, you were mentioning something else that I wanted to go down, that I wanted to get back to. One thing I can talk about, I was watching this morning, it was very quick, but they were showing him walking into the courthouse. Did you see that?
I have not seen it yet.
It was just a quick piece. And he was walking, he was in a red, you know, uniform, so to speak. And he was walking to the court and he was looking straight ahead and he looked like a robot. You know, he did turn to the side at the very beginning when he got out of the truck, the van that he was in, because there were reporters and they were calling to him and all of that. But he didn't change his expression. He still had that deadpan expression. He turned back, you know, he turned to the side for a quick second. And then he turned back facing straight and he kept he was like a robot, like I said. And, you know, one of the things, there had been a report, and I don't know whether it was accurate or not, or maybe there was a report that he was taken off suicide watch in Pennsylvania. And I mentioned on a show the night before, I guess it was Sunday night, about how they should not have taken him off suicide watch because incels, that is their sort of their way of doing things, that first they want to kill all the Chads and Stacys, especially Stacys, and then they kill themselves. Like, you know, there was the most famous incel was Elliot Roger, who perpetrated the crime at the UC Santa Barbara. And do you remember that in 2014, where he stabbed people, he shot people, and he used his car to ram them. And then he shot himself. And so I think it is definitely, and supposedly this morning I read something that he is on suicide watch now. So maybe they put him back on it, or maybe the report that I read that he was taken off was wrong. I don't know, but he definitely should be on suicide watch, whether in Pennsylvania or in Idaho. Because, you know, especially the more he starts realizing that things are not looking good for him, You know, on the one hand, he wants the attention. I think he's like struggling with that. On the one hand, he wants everybody watching him in court and playing this whole thing out. On the other hand, he doesn't want, once he comes to the conclusion that he's probably going to be found guilty, he's going to want to take control of his own life, you know, kill himself and not be put to death with the death penalty, or even spend 20. I don't know that he'd want to spend his life, the rest of his life in prison. Although I think he wants to write a book or have a book written about him, just like what he was reading about in his criminology courses. He wants to be one of those guys.
I think there's no question about that. And unfortunately, that is, well, I don't want to say unfortunately, but it's just, you don't want to give these guys additional fame, but that is definitely what's going to happen. And what do you make of this, the fact that he was being taught by this Catherine Ramsland? She's this forensic psychologist. She's an expert on serial killers. She's saying that she's not making any statements right now, but I believe that she was the autobiographer as well of the BTK killer.
Yes, yes, yes. She wrote it with him. Yes, I think that that is what gave him the idea of, you know, the book idea, that he would like to be one of her, you know, have her use him in one of her courses. I think it's good that she's not making any comments, because I don't think, you know, I mean, she probably is thinking to herself, damn, you know, did I contribute to him committing this crime because of teaching him about all these killers? And the answer to that would be yes. So, yes. So I think that, you know, she probably also doesn't want to say anything that would harm him. I mean, although she probably will be called by a witness for the prosecution, I would think. Although maybe for the defense, like saying he was always a good student when he has had teachers of his, criminology teachers, say what a good student he was, and he seemed normal to me. And, you know, of course, one of them that said that, she was teaching him over Zoom, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Well, and also when you were talking about him walking into whatever building, the courthouse or whichever building he was walking into, and he looked like a robot, I was wondering, it seems like these guys can compartmentalize certain portions of the spectrum of their emotional, I don't know, can they just turn things off and turn it back on at will?
Yeah. But, you know, I think for him, I mean, there have been classmates who talk about his deadpan face. And so, I mean, I think he's kind of used to being in that way. You know, one of the things I had commented about how in for an article about what to look for if you're to, you know, if you're to try to spot, before he was arrested, obviously, who you can, how you can spot perhaps the killer. And one of the things I talked about was how he would be someone who would have a change of personality after the killing, that he would become more animated. And indeed, that's what the classmates are saying, that he became, he didn't talk about the killing, like when they talked about it in class, in his criminology class in Washington, he didn't really have anything to say necessarily. He was quiet. But after the killings, in general, not about that case, not about the killings, but about just in general, about whatever they were talking about in criminology class, that he was much more animated, talkative, and so on. And that's because he is so proud of himself that he killed all these Stacys and a Chad, that he can now feel, you know, confident and proud and ha ha, I know something you guys don't.
So he's got a rush out of it, and he's he's walking around very pleased with himself. That blows my mind. I tell you what, let's go ahead, and because I know that you have to get out of here early, so we're going to take this final break a little early as well. I'm speaking with Dr. Carol Lieberman. We're talking about the tragedy that happened in Idaho. We'll be right back.
Oh no, the climate crisis affects reproductive rights. Pregnant people are more at risk for heat-related illnesses.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
If you're a chest-feeding man, we've got news for you. Climate change will put you more at risk for heat-related illnesses. Women's E! News reports that pregnant people are more at risk because studies suggest links between high temperatures and poorer maternal health. Infants struggle to eat or sleep, and women struggle to breastfeed in the heat. But couldn't air conditioning bring about less heat? Unfortunately, air conditioning isn't allowed because it allegedly causes more global warming. So if you needed another reason to radically transform your life and cut your CO2 emissions, Women's E! News tells us save the pregnant people by supporting Net Zero Agenda. This is Mark Marano, the Marano Minute on TNT Radio.
Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine taking your child to school where all the other kids have access to textbooks, paper, and pencils, but your child is only allowed to listen. Would you be okay with that? That's what it means to be blind. For every 100 books a sighted child can access, a blind child has access to less than 5. Help put the world at the fingertips of vision-impaired kids. Donate now at braillehouse.org.au.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
In our final minutes with Dr. Carol Lieberman, let me ask you this. There was talk early on that he had created a poll and put it out, I believe, on Reddit, you know, and he was looking for volunteers to ask them particular questions. What do you make of that?
Yes, that's really interesting. And his teachers are saying, you know, like it made a big news when someone brought that to the attention of the media, because he was asking about the emotions. He was asking felons, people who had committed crimes, to talk about the emotions that they felt when they were committing the crime and after the crime and so on. And also other things like, how did you pick your victims? Just wanting to get inside the head of it. Now, the teachers are saying, well, this is normal. This is not, everybody's making a big deal out of it, but these are the kinds of things you study in criminology school, which makes sense. I mean, it really isn't that far out of the ordinary. You know, if he hadn't become hadn't become the suspect in this horrible crime, you know, nothing would have been made of it. The teachers weren't making anything of it. But I think that he was trying to figure this out for himself. Like, he wanted, this goes to trying to commit the perfect crime. It goes to trying to understand how he's going to feel before he does it and while he's doing it and afterwards. And if that's normal, if that's what other killers feel. People say, like people who study psychology or become psychologists or psychiatrists, they say they're trying to figure out themselves.
Right.
Well, this guy, who, is allegedly a murderer, he was trying to figure out himself through criminology courses.
Let me ask you this. If this does turn out to be the guy, I think it's a guy, but do you think that we will uncover other crimes in his past?
Well, that's the interesting question. I think it's possible. Not necessarily. I mean, it doesn't have to have been, but I think we could find some more things in the past. I'm sure they're looking at unsolved killings and so on. What's another interesting aspect is how he followed in the footsteps of Ted Bundy. Because Ted Bundy studied psychology, and Brian studied, first he majored in psychology in undergrad, and then he went to criminology in graduate schools. But Ted Bundy studied psychology, and then he was studying law, and he was studying in Washington, in the state of Washington. And it makes me wonder whether in fact Brian was following him, literally following him. The only difference is, though, that Ted Bundy was a charmer, And yes. He didn't have a problem getting women. He wasn't an incel.
Yeah, this person is complex, and this is probably just speculation. I know we have 2 minutes left of your time. They're saying that, you know, because the apprehension came down suddenly, and it was related to the white Hyundai Elantra or what have you, and perhaps some DNA evidence. Do you have any further info on what it was that finally sealed the deal? They said, hey, this is our guy, and we're going to go apprehend him in Pennsylvania.
Well, those are the only two things that I've heard about so far.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing that really is fascinating about that whole thing, that his father went to him in Washington and they drove home together. Now, talk about being in denial. The father has heard that they're looking for a killer who has a white Hyundai Elantra, and they're driving across country in a white Hyundai Elantra. Like, duh. He didn't think to himself, could it be my son? I mean, you know, it's understandable he would be in denial, but still, he had to have, unless he was under a rock, he had to have heard that they were looking for that kind of a car, and the years between 2011 and 2013. So they had said that the father had planned to come out there before, I don't know since when, but like for a little while before then. But
was the plan always to drive back? Was that why he was coming to see his son, to both drive back together?
Apparently, but like, why? You know, why did the father just suddenly decide it's on my bucket list? I want to take a trip across America. Or did he tell, could he tell in their phone calls that his son was upset or something so he made the trip with him? I don't know.
And if that were the case, if you were really concerned about your child, you don't let it go a few weeks. I think most people try to move in and sort it out immediately.
Yes. Well, I don't know when or if they started realizing that there was something troubling their son. But I'm not saying that the father was a co-conspirator or anything like that, but you just kind of have to wonder. Clearly, the most interesting things are going to be coming out eventually, which has to do with his parents, like, yes, you know, his childhood. That's really where the money is, so to speak. And we haven't heard anything about that other than
his sister is also a therapist or a psychologist.
Yes, and his father declared bankruptcy in 2010. So I'm sure there's interesting stuff there. We just haven't heard about it yet.
Well, Dr. Lieberman, thank you so much for your time. I know that you have to run to do your own show. I will be checking in with you again, because as terrible as this story is, it's absolutely fascinating, and it's a mirror into the mind of the worst among us. But I thank you for your time today, and I wish you a happy new year.
It's my pleasure. Happy new year to you.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, she has to go because she's got her own show to do here in a minute. And we appreciate her time. And you can find her on Dr. Carol's Couch on voiceofamerica.com, also on the Terrorist Therapist podcast. So she made a little time for us today. Also, if you want to find that article that I was mentioning in Newsweek, the title of the article is Brian Koberger Was Trying to Commit the Perfect Crime. Forensic psychiatrist. So it's out there if you want to find it. And there are other mental health professionals that have quotes within that article. And, you know, we aren't a true crime channel per se, or a true crime show, but this is one of the biggest stories in America. And it's something that I wanted to cover, and it's fascinating. And oftentimes when we look at serial killers, or we look at school shooters or what have you, with school shooters, they typically kill themselves at the end, or they find a way to commit suicide by policemen or what have you, whereas serial killers try to evade arrest as long as possible and almost take pride in their horrible actions. So it's just a really interesting aspect of the human story to look at. And for the families of those three young women and that one young man. We're very sorry for the loss, and we will continue to follow this because it's just fascinating. But there's a lot going on. In the second hour, we're going to talk about the Kerry Lake situation. So Hobbs has been seated as governor in Arizona. We're going to talk more about probably about the Kevin McCarthy situation. I really don't know what's going to happen to that House Speaker. I'm not a fan of Kevin McCarthy, but I also am not super stoked to see the Republican Party just collapse upon itself. Maybe that's not going to happen, but there's all kinds of various theories on what could happen. Jim Jordan, I think that could be a positive. I think that could be a positive Speaker of the House just because he's not one of the typical uniparty rhino neocon type Republicans. He's a guy that seems to actually stand for something, even though he catches a lot of criticism. So I think that that's not such a bad choice. I don't know who else would be amongst the potential people that could be take the House speakership. One thing I'm glad about, it ain't going to be Nancy Pelosi. Get her out of here. So I'm glad that that is over, and it makes me very, very happy. And you know what? All of the attention that we put upon people like Donald Trump and any Republican who does anything, I wish that the same attention got paid to the other side of the aisle. And as we spoke yesterday, it's like, this is not because I'm a hardcore Republican. I do lean right. But it's like, I just want to see a level playing field. I want to see the Justice Department. I want to see law enforcement. I want to see the intel agencies. I want to see media handle things on a little bit more of a level playing field, because they just play kid. They play hands off with these guys when it's on the Democratic side. And when it's the Republican side, it's all you hear about day in and day out. Of course, now this Friday, I believe, is the anniversary of January 6th. So we'll be talking a bit about that in the days coming up to it. But it's like, we're still hearing about that. It's still everywhere, all the time. January 6th, January 6th, January 6th. Hunter Biden laptop? Not so much. And when people do talk about the Biden laptop, it's, well, that's just, you know, that's just Republican sour grapes. No, we need to be talking about it because it is a very important look into American politics and the fact that this family was selling their influence. Clearly, there is no question. And the guy should be held accountable for that. His father should be held accountable at the same level of ferocity that they hold Donald Trump. And then on the other hand, we look at people like Hillary Clinton. You know, it's like you begin to think, well, these people, nothing ever happens to them. And I do not want to accept that. I understand where people get these feelings, but I don't want to accept it, especially when I see them not let go of things that happen on the red side. On the blue side, yeah, it's you know, it's in the rearview mirror. Forget about it. There's nothing to see. On the red side, front page news, headline news, day in and day out. So that's my hope in 2023. And with this House Speaker situation, I think that Jim Jordan would be good. Now, when Dan Crenshaw and these guys are blaming all the other Republicans for not supporting McCarthy, it's like, bro, I mean, dial it down a little bit, okay? Because stand for something, stand for principle. And it's like, just because you've got an eye patch does not mean that I have to trust you or think you're a badass. I question your motives. I mean, you're seeming pretty neocon to me. I could be wrong, but I don't trust you. And so you might want to hush on that a little bit. Hopefully, John Matlin will have more information for us in the second hour, and we will revisit that. But we're mostly going to be talking about the situation in Arizona. Jeff Zink has been on the show a few times. He ran for election in Arizona's 3rd congressional district. He was not successful, but he could still give us a good picture of what's going on in Arizona, because I want to hear from the people of Arizona. I want to know what they're thinking. Now, I'm sure that Hobbs has her supporters. I mean, supposedly she had a lot of them, right? She had all those votes. But I also know that Kerry Lake had a lot of supporters. And those other Republicans who ran and were defeated had supporters. So I want to know what the general feeling of the regular guy and gal in Arizona is your state is under siege from illegal immigration. The electoral process there seems to be a disaster. And when Biden shows up in your state, he can't even be bothered to go to the border. So people of Arizona, I want to hear from you, and I want to know what you feel like, what you think, because this is important. And it's very frustrating to see these things play out and play out over and over again. And people point at the fact that Carrie Lake is not the governor and say, you know, well, again, this is sour grapes. You need to take your toys, go home, shut up. I like the fact that she's not shutting up. I'll bet you do too. This is Deprogram. My name is Michael Parker. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk with John Madeline and then Jeff Zink. Stick around.